Good morning. Richard is not here today. He is in Florida, sort of on vacation. I think it's more a vacation for his family, because he's still studying for the bar, and he took his books with him. So that's not a vacation in my book, but, you know, hopefully he's having somewhat of a good time. I think he's got one more test on Friday, and then he's done with all that, so be praying about that. But turning your Bibles to Numbers 13, we've been studying Genesis and Exodus, and we're not done yet, but it seemed fitting to me to study the next period in history there, so I've been studying out Numbers and Joshua, and it's been inspiring to me. So I hope I can share some of that inspiration today, and we'll learn some things. Numbers chapter 13. It says, "The Lord said to Moses, 'Send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I'm giving to the Israelites, from each ancestral tribe and one of its leaders.' So at the Lord's command, Moses sent them out from the desert of Paran. All of them were leaders of the Israelites." These are their names. I'm not going to read them. We only remember two of them. But do notice that they were all leaders of each tribe. We'll come back to that. Verse 17 says, "When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, 'Go up through the Negev and unto the hill country. See what the land is like and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees on it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land.'" It was the season for the first ripe grapes. "So they went up and explored the land from the desert of Zin as far as Rehob toward Lebo Hamath. They went up through the Negev and came to Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, lived." Remember those three names: Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, or however you say that. We'll come back to that as well. It says, "Hebron had been built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. When they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land." And Moses tells them specifically where to go, the Negev and the hill country. And they go to Hebron and they meet these guys there that, as I told you about, we're going to talk about later on. Something I had never noticed before anyway, but remember that. And then in verse 26, it says, "They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There, they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account: 'We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here's its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan.' Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, 'We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it.' But the men who had gone up with him said, 'We can't attack those people. They're stronger than we are.' And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, 'The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, The descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seem like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we look the same to them. That night, all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, and this is going to sound familiar, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, He will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." Title of my lesson today is Spiritual Vision. And my first point is spiritual vision requires faith. Now I want you to think about this. The other 10 leaders, whatever their names were, did they lie? I don't think so. Maybe exaggerated a little bit. I don't know. I think their problem was one of vision. You know, Joshua and Caleb and the 10 of them, they saw the same thing. They reported on the same things. But they, in two paragraphs, they had one sentence about the fruit of the land and the rest about the powerful people, the fortified cities, the very large cities, the Anakites and Amalekites and all the other ites, and they seemed like grasshoppers in their own eyes. That was their report. Joshua and Caleb talked about how good, exceedingly good, the land was. They talked about the Lord and His protection, about the milk and honey, about swallowing them up because the Lord would be with us, and about not being afraid. And so the question today is, how is your vision? These are the same people who Exodus 14 says put their trust in the Lord. And I got to preach about that about a month ago. And it's just a lot easier right after they crossed the Red Sea to do that, isn't it? They just saw it. They just saw this miracle. They lived it. It's awesome. It's inspiring. But now here's another challenge. And what do they see? They see giants and fortified cities. But Joshua and Caleb saw the Lord. They saw His promise. They saw the fruit of the land, and they saw the fulfillment of that promise in it. And they had dreams and visions of what could happen and what God could do and the blessings that God wanted to give them, as He had said. Isn't it good to have that kind of vision? We had our vision Sunday a few weeks ago. I think that's what got me thinking along these lines. And it's exciting to think about what could happen with having our own building and just what we could do with it. And, you know, it's just good to think about that. And many of us were willing to sacrifice and commit to giving more money to see that vision become a reality. I read a quote by Ayn Rand. It says, "Throughout the centuries, there were men who took first steps down new roads, armed with nothing but their own vision." And, you know, we all look back at history, and there's a lot of characters that we admire. You know, I have my own. I like to read biographies. I love Nelson Mandela and others. You know, but it's good to read about these guys that had vision and went against all odds and achieved great things. And we are always admire them and inspired because they had to go through great trials and persecutions. In the case of Mandela, it's 27 years in prison. And he didn't give up on that vision. But the question is, what do we see when things get that tough? Do we see giants? Or do we see the opportunities for God to deliver? Now, this applies to any challenge in life, right? Economic, health, job, family. But we're talking about spiritual vision here. And I was thinking about when I got baptized and joined the church. And, you know, we had this goal in the church to spread the gospel to every nation. And we had specific goals about it. You know, we want to be in every city with a city of 100,000 or more. And we're going to do it by such and such a time and all that stuff. And you know, it was inspiring to be a part of that to me. We had many challenges along the way. Those who went on mission teams, many suffered persecutions. You know, others of us sacrificed financially or time and energy. And we were inspired about that vision. There's a lot more work to do still. And we still got to have that kind of vision for Gwinnett and more. Many other places in Georgia and this nation and around the world that need the message that we've been given. We got to have personal vision. You know, I know for me, I love being involved in the Spanish ministry and just thinking about all the countries that are here in Gwinnett that we can reach out to. And who knows what they're going to do somewhere else in the world one day. But what about you? What do you see God doing in your life? In the church? In your family group? In your family? These guys were leaders. Both Joshua and Caleb and the other 10. And there's a very convicting lesson in this. For those of us who are leaders or want to be leaders, whether it's deacons or elders or family group leaders or whatever other leader we can have. And, you know, that vision is contagious. And really the lack of vision, often more so, can be contagious. I mean, that was these guys' problem. It wasn't just the fear of the giants, but the lack of vision. They failed to see what God would have done and would do eventually. But they didn't see it. Neither with vision or they didn't see it. We know the story, right? The 10 leaders died immediately of a plague. You can read about it in that same chapter. The rest of the adults spent 40 years suffering in the desert until they died themselves. And only Joshua and Caleb survived and got to see the promised land. Let's look in Joshua 14. Now we skip a little bit. 45 years or so, to be exact. Joshua defeated 31 kings as he led God's people. And they're all listed in chapter 12 of Joshua, if you're curious. He got to witness great miracles. The Jericho wall fell after they marched around it. When they fought the king of Jerusalem, the sun stood still. That's pretty cool right there. And it says that no other time did something like that ever happen, that God listened to a man like he listened to Joshua that day. And how cool must that have felt? I mean, just imagine being a part of something like that. Well, that's what you get to see when you have vision, when you have faith, when you trust God. You get to see God inspire you. But now Joshua is very old at this point in chapter 14, and they're dividing up the conquered lands among the tribes. And a good chunk of Joshua is this whole process of dividing the lands, which is kind of dry to read, so I won't bore you with it. But it must have been exciting to them. You know, we're finally here. We're getting what we were promised. After all these years, after all this roaming in the desert, after all this fighting, and after all we've seen God do, we're here. We're at this point. That must have been pretty awesome. Look in verse 6 here. Caleb's still around. It says, now the men of Judah approached Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, said to him, "You know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, at Kadesh Barnea about you and me. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to explore the land. And I brought him back a report according to my convictions. But my brothers who went up with me made the hearts of the people melt with fear. I, however, followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly. So on that day Moses swore to me, 'The land on which your feet have walked will be your inheritance and that of your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly.' Now then, just as the Lord promised, He has kept me alive for 45 years since the time He said this to Moses, while Israel moved about in the desert. So here I am today, 85 years old. I'm still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. Now, give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. You yourself heard then that the Anakites were there and their cities were large and fortified, but this is a different but than the other one. The Lord helping me, I will drive them out just as He said." I love this passage. I like to think that getting old is a lot about attitude. But that's for free. That's a lesson for another time. Although that physical part does scream loudly sometimes, doesn't it? But look what it says in verse 7. I brought him back a report according to what? According to my convictions. My second point is spiritual vision requires conviction. Now, I tried to look up conviction in the dictionary. It didn't really help me. It just said like strong faith or something like that, which is kind of true. It's very related, faith and conviction, right? But, you know, I think the key is verse 8 here. It says, "I, however, follow the Lord my God wholeheartedly." To me, conviction is when you believe enough to act on it, to base your life on that belief. I read a Japanese proverb once. Not sure how well translated it is, but it sounds pretty good. It says, "Vision without action is a daydream. Action without vision is a nightmare." You can think about that one for a while. But who here has daydreamed about winning the lottery? Okay, I'm not the only one. All right. Actually, I do that quite a bit. You know, you hear about these people, they win $50 million, and I start thinking, man, you know, what I would do, pay off the house, buy this, buy that, give money to the church, do this, do that, yada, yada, yada. Yet I've never bought a lottery ticket. That's daydreaming. That's not what we're talking about. Now, some of you might go buy that lottery ticket. I guess you have a little bit more vision than I do there, which is fine, I guess. But, you know, it's action or vision with action. Again, coming back to that vision Sunday, thinking about possibly getting a building. You know, we had to step up and make a commitment that we would sacrifice. Are we going to keep that up once we get the building and we're there for a while? And maybe things get tougher? Or what if we don't get it? At least not this particular one. We're going to keep, you know, sacrificing anyway because we know God has a plan and we believe that. And we're willing to base our life on that and act on that conviction. And what about our other dreams? Are they daydreams? Or are they conviction? That's the question. What will you do? That's the difference between the two. I was studying this out, and for some reason, it came to mind the thing we do with feeding the homeless once a month. I remember when that started. That was one brother who felt in his heart that we should do that, and he went out and talked to people in the shelter and rounded up some brothers to get some food together. And, you know, 10 years later, we're still doing it, and there's several churches involved in it. And that was his vision and his conviction and his action. And, you know, he's helped a lot of people because of it. And it's been good for us, too. But now, remember those guys I told you to remember? Now, you know, Steve Collier and probably a few other scholars around here knew where I was going when I told you to remember that. But this is the first time I noticed this. So I was pretty fired up about this. Look in chapter 15. Because they come up again here in verse 13. It says, in accordance with the Lord's command to him, Joshua gave to Caleb, son of Jephunneh, a portion in Judah, Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron. Arba was the forefather of Anak. And from Hebron, Caleb drove out the three Anakites, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, descendants of Anak. From there, he marched against the people living in Debir, formerly called Kiriath Sefer. Now, back in chapter 14, he specifically asked for that piece of land. Give me the hill country where the descendants of Anak were. And there he goes. He went and drove them out. Give me where those giants are. Now, I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, he spent 40 years in the desert with a faithless people. That could have been discouraging. I mean, most of his life, he's 85 years old now, most of his life was Egypt and the desert. Okay? He's 85 now. I could understand him having thought it's over now, or something along those lines. You know, I'm not going to really get to see what my kids are going to enjoy, whatever. Something. But no, his conviction carried him through. And this just had to have felt good. I mean, you know that he remembered 45 years ago those three guys that scared everybody off. And he's like, man, those are the guys I want to go after. Send me over there. Give me that hill country that scared everybody. I mean, how good must it have felt to just drive those guys out? You know, this should have been like a men's class, you know. We could just get down and, you know, do a war cry or something. I mean, that must have felt really good just how glorious it must have been for him to remember 45 years ago what happened. And then to see being on the other side of that and to see that victory. And, you know, a friend of mine back at Georgia Tech, a brother named Shane Lord, used to always say when things got tough, he said, that's all right. It's just going to be more glorious in the end. That was like his favorite saying that he used to tell me all the time. It's just going to be more glorious in the end. And I think that's how it was for Caleb. I mean, the fact that he went through all that, it had to have been so sweet. And I think we got to get back to being willing to sacrifice our time, our energy, our money, our comfort for something that's just greater than ourselves. I mean, you know, we're disciples. We're not about this world. And it really should be a little bit uncomfortable sometimes to live the Christian life and just step out on faith, because we know that there's something better waiting for us. Now look in chapter 23 here. I got to wrap this up, so make this one quick. Joshua's still very old. But it says, after a long time had passed, he got to stay old for a while. It says, the Lord had given Israel rest from all their enemies around them. Joshua, by then old and well advanced in years, summoned all Israel, their elders, leaders, judges, and officials, and said to them, I'm old and well advanced in years. He keeps saying that. He must have felt it by then. You yourselves have seen everything the Lord your God has done to all these nations for your sake. It was the Lord your God who fought for you. Remember how I have allotted as an inheritance for your tribes all the land of the nations that remain, the nations I conquered between the Jordan and the Great Sea in the west. The Lord your God himself will drive them out of your way. He will push them out before you, and you will take possession of their land as the Lord your God promised you. And he goes on. My third point is spiritual vision requires us to remember. I mean, that was part of the failure of the other 10 guys, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know how they forgot so quickly what they had seen God do with the Red Sea and the plagues and all that. But they did. But here Joshua is well advanced in years, very far removed from all those events, close to his last day, and he still has a vision for his people after him. Why is that? Because he remembered. And he was still inspired about what he had seen God do. I mean, look in verse 9. It says, the Lord has driven out before you great and powerful nations. To this day, no one has been able to withstand you. One of you routs 1,000 because the Lord your God fights for you, just as he promised. So be very careful to love the Lord your God. Verse 14. Now I'm about to go the way of all the earth. You know, with all your heart and soul, that not one of all the good promises the Lord your God gave you has failed. Every promise has been fulfilled. Not one has failed. And he goes on to remind them specifically, you can read it, it's pretty cool, of all the different things that God did and they saw. Then in verse 14 of the next chapter, he said, now, fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your forefathers worshipped beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your forefathers served beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you're living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Then the people answered, far be it from us to forsake the Lord to serve other gods. It was the Lord our God himself who brought us and our fathers out of Egypt from that land of slavery and performed those great signs before our eyes. He protected us on our entire journey and among all the nations through which we traveled. And the Lord drove out before us all the nations, including the Amorites who lived in the land. We too will serve the Lord, because he is our God. Verse 31. Israel served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him and who had experienced everything the Lord had done for Israel. So we see a different story with these guys. These guys remembered. Joshua remembered. He was inspired about the next generation. And when I think about what God's done in my life, I have the same feeling. I mean, I'm inspired about my kids. I have hope. I mean, I think about what I've been saved from, what my marriage would be like, my family, without what God's done in my life. And I know that He hadn't just saved me. He saved them as well. And I dream of what their lives will be as faithful disciples. My daughter already talks about getting baptized one day. She's 6. We practiced it the other day. She's talking about how she's going to close her eyes. First, she was going to wear goggles. Or think about what God's done in the church. The good times, the miracles throughout the world, being a part of that in some way. Or the tough times. That's the bigger miracle, I think. I mean, I know that I'm stronger for the challenges we've been through as a church. And I think that's an even bigger miracle to think about where God has taken us. But the question is, will we have the faith? Will we have the conviction? Will we remember what God has done so we can have the vision to see God's miracles and pass it on to those after us? God bless you all.